Now, our science and technology slot today is taking a closer look at how technology is being used to specifically boost the fight against HIV in Africa. With me in studio is an international expert in strategic planning and a man named by Time magazine as one of its 18 global health heroes. His name is Dr. Ernest Darko, and he is the co-founder and co-CEO of Broadreach, which is a social enterprise focused on using the fourth industrial revolution to improve health and well-being in Africa. And he recently spoke at the World Economic Forum on Africa, hosted here in Cape Town not so long ago, talking to this issue of how technology can be used and in fact is already being used to improve access to HIV treatment, even in some of the remotest parts of our country. So looking forward to hearing more about it. Dr. Darko, thank you so much for joining us in Cape Talk today. Welcome.
Thank you, Pippa. It's a pleasure to be here.
There has been so much progress in the past decade in the management of HIV, really shifting it from being a life-ending diagnosis to being a manageable chronic condition. But it's only a manageable condition if patients have sustained access to appropriate treatment and if communities have sustained access to proper information on prevention. So let's start maybe with the latter. What role can technology play in helping communities keep informed about the risks of HIV?
Well, first and foremost, as you're aware, HIV, it's an infectious disease. You know, it's acquired, you know, through sexual contact primarily in our environment, and it propagates that way. And one of the starting place is we need to educate communities and individuals about the risks of acquiring HIV, and technology can play a big role in doing that. If you think a few years back before we had social media, you had, of course, radio was there as a means of reaching people. But now with social media, you can do so much more targeted messaging and education for people to be aware, to first and foremost keep themselves safe. Mm-hmm. Even if you're already infected, you need to keep yourself safe because you don't want to acquire another strain of the virus, for example, that's resistant to the medication you take. So on a population level, you have people who are not yet infected, and you have people who are infected. And I think technology can play a revolutionary role in terms of how we engage with individuals, both, you know, infected, non-infected, but we're all affected, you know, in essence, and in particular based on the levels of disease that we have in this country. And we can use technology, basically, I think, to really, in a game-changing way, to change how we approach the issue of education and building awareness about HIV, but also chronic diseases, which are probably just as big, if not a bigger problem at the moment in South Africa.
Of course. I mean, we carry a very heavy burden on our healthcare system as a result of chronic disease.
Exactly.
I know diabetes being a key one, heart-related disease as well, also huge for South Africa. So it's not HIV alone where there is this potential. And we are going to speak a little bit later in the interview to some really specific examples of projects underway. But just as part of the bigger picture, is part of the battle overcoming incorrect information and messaging? Because we know urban legend, misunderstood, half understood information that somebody has heard and shared and passed along, and the reality has been lost in the translation. Is part of the challenge of proper use of technology making sure that people have access to correct information?
Absolutely. And I'm sure we've all seen examples where the use of technology is propagating the wrong messages. Mm-hmm. For example, the anti-vaccine movement, you know. And in the case of HIV, definitely, it's surprising that I think, 40-something years into the epidemic, we're still dealing with the issue of inappropriate messaging and people just not having the right information. In the African context, there's so many complexities. There's language issues, there's cultural issues, there's religious beliefs, for example, that all get, you know, conflated into what creates a very complex environment in which you're trying to deliver certain messages. HIV, because it's a disease and often it's medical people who are trying to deliver the messages, you find that often the message doesn't translate appropriately in a way that emotionally resonates with people at their core, meaning that they truly understand it. So one of the studies, for example, we did a few years ago was we looked at traditional medicine and how that interacted with, you know, the Western medical model.
Yeah.
And it was very clear, for example, that a lot of people truly, who believe in traditional medicine, there would actually be quite a few problems you'd have if you try to actually give them the HIV therapy without taking the time to really explain in a way that they understood, you know, how this medication actually works. So, for example, concepts like adherence, concepts like compliance to medication. In fact, the concept of treatment itself is problematic. So in the cultural context of most South Africans, treatment means cure. However, as we know from the Western medical point of view, treatment for HIV means you're not cured. It manages the disease. It's like managing your blood pressure. It keeps it in check, but you're not actually cured, right? However, if you look on the traditional side, all of the therapies actually mean you get cured, right? Right. So from the traditional perspective, it's only cure. So when we now say, you know, we're giving you treatment, the person understands I've been cured. And then we, for example, have situations currently like where people who have HIV keep, who are on treatment, keep going to retest to see if somehow they're now HIV negative. And we know that you don't become HIV negative, but that's, again, an example of how the difficult it is to get the right messaging through. Yeah.
You no doubt run the same risk that I know plagues the professionals treating TB, that patients go on the medication, feel better, think they're fixed and stop taking the medication. And there's a knock on, not only does it stop having the impact, but you make yourself at higher risk of further complications.
Exactly. And we have some, for example, religious groups who, you know, profess that you can be cured by prayer, and in essence, taking your medication is a sign that you don't have faith, right? And then almost insisting that their adherents get off treatment as a sign that they actually have faith. So we have a lot of complex sociocultural issues that I think it's about finding the right messaging. And I think it's right. And to me, my recommendation is we need to explain the Western medicine, but with African analogies, with the cultural analogies, find a cultural analog to what we want to express and express it that way. So you're telling people it's like doing this particular traditional thing that you do. And then they get it like, oh, I understand. Even when I feel well, I have to do that thing. Right? I have to do it every day, no matter what. They get it. But if I just try to explain it in English, like I'm speaking now, and using, you know, terms like adherence and compliance, etc., people don't really get it. And as far as they're concerned, exactly as you said, as soon as I feel better, I'm cured, I get off treatment.
Now, we're talking here in many cases about communities in some of the most remote parts of not just South Africa, but Africa full stop. Access is what is talking about access is one thing. Being able to access them.
Yes.
These are areas that don't have good cell phone reception, that don't necessarily have internet connectivity, that don't have devices on which to read these messages. What's the solution? How do you get around that challenge?
Well, first, let me contextualize it a bit in terms of the scale of the problem. The state of California, with a population of about 39 million people, has more healthcare workers than the whole of Africa, with a population of 1.2 or so billion people, right? Wow. Just to contextualize. Yeah. And we are trying to address bigger problems in Africa than California has. Bigger burdens of disease, more complex burdens of disease, with a minuscule fraction of the resources available in a place like California. And if in California, they're still struggling to get on top of their issues, you can just imagine what's waiting for us. So the access issue you describe is incredibly poignant, and we really do have to think about how we tackle healthcare in our context with a much more creativity, much more efficiency, and in essence, use technology to leapfrog some of the traditional barriers that would have stopped us from serving our populations and from them having access.
It's so timeless we're having this conversation today, because literally yesterday in Parliament, our Health Minister, Dr. Mkhize, made that comment that our healthcare spending has not kept track with inflation, that we have too few healthcare workers, that the burden on hospitals is overloaded, that we just don't have enough resources to go around. So can you give us a couple of concrete examples of how technology can be helped, can help us leapfrog that chasm that's standing in front of us?
Okay. So first and foremost, you know, you're trying to match the resources you have on the health system with the demand that's placed on it by the people who are ill, but also people who are well. Because remember, healthcare is about keeping people well, first and foremost, and then also treating the people who are sick. When I'll give you an example in South Africa, you know, we work across four districts in South Africa, two in Mpumalanga, two in KZN. And when we'd engage with a particular district who usually are overseeing about 100 health facilities, initially when you get to them, they say, I am completely broken. You know, I don't have enough nurses. I don't have enough drugs. I don't have enough staff. I will basically not be able to do much unless I get these resources. Mm. And what we will then do is first and foremost engage using technology to analyze their data and really try to say, are you broken everywhere, or is it really, are you more broken in a few facilities that actually by addressing those, you disproportionately address the problem. Mm. And our analysis will show typically something like less than 20% of the facilities. So 20 facilities out of the 100 are causing 80% or more of the problem. Mm. Now, fixing 100 facilities in a work year, almost impossible with the resource you have. Fixing 20 facilities, yes, it all of a sudden becomes doable.
Achievable, yeah.
You can actually target your resources, you can target donor resources, you can target NGO resources on those 20 clinics and very quickly achieve turnaround. So to give you a practical example, in one case, one of the districts we support was struggling with the issue of viral load and testing. And that is assessing whether the treatment is working in the people who are getting it. Initially, they were performing at 32%. We did this analysis and it revealed something like less than 20% of facilities were causing more than 80% of the problem. In less than 6 months, by targeting the resources at those facilities, we're able to get them to above 92%
wow.
performance. From 32% in less than 6 months. Now, you can imagine if we had not taken that targeted approach using technology guiding us on where to go, we would have just wasted money and not mm-hmm. actually moved the needle at all. And then secondly, for actually fixing the problem, you can imagine a situation where I came here to this interview using Waze. Right? Mm-hmm. Waze guided me. That's technology analyzing millions of data points and telling me the best place to go in order to get here on time.
Yeah.
Imagine a system now telling the health workers every day the best thing to be doing in the right places at the right times so that they get the best healthcare result. So we provide that technology as well to healthcare workers now to guide them in fixing those problems that are uncovered in those 20 facilities.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And that's how we get, I think, quite game-changing turnaround and results in record time.
That's incredible. And I'm just thinking of the analogy of fighting a fire. You're talking about arriving at a house, a building that's on fire, and you can see flames coming out of one
yes.
window. So that's where the fire
exactly.
firefighters point the hose.
Exactly.
But meanwhile, the burning yes. heart of the fire is actually in the other end of the building.
Exactly.
You're wasting your water
exactly.
fighting the front
exactly.
window. I get it. The one thing that occurs to me, and I'm not sure how much this has been explored or how relevant this is, but stigma continues to be
yes.
an issue, particularly
yes.
for HIV, despite
yes.
everything that we've done to try and change perspectives. It is something that is a factor, and I've heard stories from healthcare workers sitting here not too long ago.
Yes.
I had somebody from a rural clinic in the Eastern Cape telling us nobody comes to the best stocked and best located situated clinic in their region, which is perfectly funded
yes.
to treat HIV, because it's known as the HIV clinic.
Exactly.
And by going there, you are seen as targeting yourself effectively. Technology has the beauty of being able to engage with patients privately without
yes.
that. Is that something you're exploring? Because this is a big part of what that healthcare worker said to me, sorry to interrupt,
yeah.
is that she has seen patients falling off the treatment system because they would exactly. rather risk not being on the medication than risk being seen going to that clinic to get it.
Absolutely. And by the way, I fully understand. I would say if I was in their shoes, I'd probably be doing exactly the same thing. Sadly, HIV is still very stigmatized. But when you actually think about it, most diseases are very stigmatized. People don't want to reveal they have mental health issues,
yeah.
right? People don't want to reveal they have, you know, sexually transmitted diseases, right? So I think healthcare has always been a very, when you step into almost like the sanctum of the clinic, it's a safe space where confidentiality, almost by definition, is supposed to be assured. And you're supposed to have that by right. And I think with HIV, in the zealousness to address it, yes, we've labeled it very heavily, including labeling some of the facilities. And I think it has that adverse effect of making it unwelcoming to people, because by standing outside or going in there, it automatically outs you for something that's, you know, very personal and very painful. So I do understand. And I think interventions on that end look like delabeling the clinics, integrating HIV care into normal care. Right. So aspects of HIV can be delivered by your dentist, can be delivered by your GP, can be delivered by any nurse in any visit. So I don't think there's any justification at this particular point in time of segmenting out HIV in a vertical way. And that's about health systems change. It's about health systems reengineering so that we stop treating HIV so vertically where it stands out and I think exacerbates the stigma.
Before we run out of time, I must ask the question about partnership and support between yourselves and government. Do you work hand in hand with the public health sector? Do you sort of try and feed into it, or do you operate in isolation? And why in either direction?
We are guests of the public sector. Okay. They invite us in. We have to have MOUs before we set foot in any facility. We take their lead, right? We let them lead us to where we're supposed to go. And we're very, very respectful and humble in that manner that it's a privilege to be allowed to come in, work with them on issues of such high impact. And I would say it's a pleasure to wake up in the morning to know I'm going to do work that matters. And the public sector gives us that permission and gives us that opportunity to basically do so. So we're very, very conscious of contributing, adding our skills, our resources, our technology to the public sector pie, as opposed to trying to create something in parallel. It's a waste of resources. And as you know, we're all about maximizing resources, not creating parallel wasteful systems.
Yeah. Final question before we're out of time. We've spoken a lot about your work here in South Africa and on a particular focus of HIV. But what about where health crises spill over borders? And I'm thinking of the Ebola crisis most recently, where it becomes a cross-continental, cross-border health crisis. Is it possible for you to go into a situation like that and use technology
yes,
to
actually,
benefit? Yes,
so we actually have a 23-country regional project called RAD, Regional Action Through Data. It covers the WHO region, West African Health Organization, and the East African equivalent, IGAD. And we're looking at a couple of things there. First is, can you predict outbreaks before they occur so that you can address them as a region more effectively? Second, can you detect them early, so meaning it hasn't spread too far before you actually detect it, and then mount the correct regional responses before people cross borders and the infection spreads. And then finally, we're actually using our technology to monitor cross-border immunizations for children, because many of these borders are very porous. Children cross back and forth, and typically they've had a paper record, so as they cross the border, you don't know what's going on with them.
Yeah.
With our partner, one of our technology partners, Jembe, we've created essentially an electronic immunization card that is valid on both sides of the border, and you can use technology to monitor that the child is getting the interventions that are required. So it's an amazing project, and we're hoping to scale it up.
It is a fascinating field, and it's been such an interesting conversation. I want to thank you so much for popping in to join us today.
Thank you, Pippa.
You've been listening to Dr. Ernest Darko, the co-founder and co-CEO of BroadReach, really interesting implications of how data can be used for improving healthcare in Africa, and delighted to know that it's happening here in South Africa as well. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.